when you first tiptoe into that world, you have your own idea of what like all powerful entrepreneur is going to be like, until, you know, something about the word courage resonates with them and he's come up and have lunch with me. And so like you realize that you're not that different. And I think that was a big, you know, in my own mind, I was putting space between who I was and this pedestal of who other people are. And then when you actually peel back the onion, the only difference is that they've done it the level that you kind of want to do it at.
On this week's episode, I speak with Ryan Berman, the founder of Courageous. Ryan is an accomplished author. He's a speaker, entrepreneur, and he's really dedicated his life to helping individuals and organizations develop the courage to make bold decisions. In this episode, we discuss the journey that Ryan went on that led him into the world of courageous decisions. He shares his journey of transforming from a creative executive in advertising to becoming the founder of a company that promotes courageous leadership. As the tables get turned just a bit, we discuss how fear affects our decision-making process and how we can learn to recognize and overcome it. We also discuss some of the wise words spoken to him in his book writing journey that ultimately led him to where he is today. I had the pleasure of being on Ryan's podcast, The Courageous Podcast, in February 2023. So it was really fun to flip the script and have him back, even though he asked me a few questions in this episode. I hope that one of these days I can incorporate just a small sliver of the knowledge that Ryan imparts as he discusses his journey to living courageously. This episode is supported by my Patreon members. If you want to join the Patreon community, please head to www.thelifeshiftpodcast.com/join, and you can find out more about the different tiers, and you can enter yourself in the t-shirt giveaway. So get ready for an honest and thought-provoking conversation with my courageous friend, Ryan Berman. I'm Matt Gilhooly, and this is The Life Shift, candid conversations about the pivotal moments that have changed lives forever. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Life Shift podcast. I am here with my friend Ryan Berman. Hey, Brian. Ryan.
I just had a life shift. I changed my name from Ryan to Brian right here on the spot.
I was actually looking at your name on the screen and the B and the R just became friends. And there you go. You're now named Brian.
I'm okay with that. I'm not sure why I shifted my name. I like my name, Ryan. Frankly, but
all right. So we'll stick with Ryan here. We were talking before we recorded. I was just on your podcast in February of 2023, and you allowed me. I'm going to say the word allow. You allowed me to get fairly uncomfortable and vulnerable in that episode, and I actually really appreciate it.
I appreciate that.
Funny enough, so we talked about kind of where I'm stuck. I feel very, very courageous in my emotional side of me, and that I can lean into really hard emotional pieces. But where I'm not courageous, and your podcast is called The Courageous Podcast, and your company is Courageous, where I'm not courageous is in my career endeavors. And funny enough, today I was getting ready to apply to a job that was kind of what we talked about a little bit. And I froze, and I closed the window, and I walked away. So I was not very courageous. So it's very ironic that we're recording today.
Why do you feel like, what was it about it that you went, bye-bye?
It's actually been something that has been happening pretty frequently for the last couple of years in getting my second master's degree and feeling wholly unqualified to do what I was educated in doing. And it becomes this kind of fear factor of, I guess, you know, part of it is that imposter syndrome that many, many people talk about, but just feeling like, well, am I qualified to do that? Can I do that? Are they going to find out that I can't? Am I going to get there and not be able to do it? So those are all the thoughts that happen today. And it's just, I love that I'm talking to you about it today as it's happening.
Yeah, no, I'm glad we've got time to talk about this stuff because there's a lot in there.
Yeah, I just thought that there was a little bit of irony that came along with the fact that it all happened and came out today. And then I was like, oh, we're recording today with Ryan. So thank you for being a part of the Life Shift podcast. As you know, I like to really kind of try to dive down deep into specific moments in people's lives that like change the trajectory completely. And I feel like I have an idea of where you're going to go. But what I like about how I kind of get guests and whatnot is I don't ask too much so that I can really uncover the conversation as we talk as regular humans across face-to-face virtually. So thank you for just being a part of this. Before we jump into that, maybe you can just tell us just a smidge about who you are and what you do now, and then kind of paint the picture of what your life was like before that moment.
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Brian, aka Ryan Berman.
I'm going to edit that out. Nobody's going to hear it.
No, of course they will. You can't edit it out. We got to keep it real. My name is Ryan Berman. I am the founder of a company called Courageous. And today my business, imagine there's like three different pillars of our business. There's Courageous Leadership. And it's lonely for everyone out there. It's really lonely for leaders. Who can you trust? How much can you trust? And so in some ways, we're an ally to the leader. There's keynotes, there's workshops, there's coaching, there's offsites, there's courage boot camps. I'll kind of give you the life shift probably happened on the way to all of this. So we'll eventually take a step back. So there's a leadership component. There's a consultancy arm. I describe us as like a special forces team that helps you figure out your special. And then once we know that special, we can help you bring to life that special. And, you know, I am a recovering advertising executive. I learned in New York City was there for almost a decade, did not get my first choice out of the gate. It was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. Was at a top three global network, 700 people, amazing learning ground, terrifying as well. Literally started on the business development team as a writer before I then jumped into running client services for a couple businesses, and then finally leaped onto the other side of the brain as a creative. I got to turn my button down and khakis in for t-shirts and basically spent 2.5-3 years concepting, writing commercials, ideas for clients that you know of, like Universal Studios, MCI, Subway, Volvo, fun little ride. Today, the consultancy side, it's like, oh, this client isn't as clear as they should be. And so we're coming up with that succinct story for them to take out both inside their culture and then sometimes out into the real world. And then the third pillar is, I'll call it entertainment for lack of a better term. And just like you have the Life Shift podcast, I have the Courageous podcast. I've got my weekly dose of courage. It's like a little nudge in your inbox every Thursday. Sometimes it's just a pick-me-up. You know, there's a lot of gravity in the world. It gets pretty heavy out there. And so we want to be helium. You know, we want to lighten it up a little bit. And so, you know, if that sounds interesting, shameless promotion number one, check out ryanberman.com and you can sign up for the newsletter there. All of this came from a 3-year journey beforehand where I was running as a co-founder an agency called IDEA, IDEA. And I live in San Diego, California. If I asked you, audience, to write down the top 10 most creative cities, I am not, San Diego's not on that list. Let's just call it what it is. If I said, greatest place to visit in the country, best fish taco, we're probably on the list. But creativity, I don't think, we're not New York, we're not San Francisco, we're not LA. And at the time, let's see here, from 2012 to 2017, we grew the agency to about 85 people. And for the first time in my life, I was smack fully in management land. As a creator, that's tough, you know, poor me. I wasn't in the day-to-day, you know, but like it was, you know, after being a creator for pretty much 20 years.
Would you say leading up to that, you led a fairly, like, was that journey fairly standard for people in your industry before getting to this kind of feeling like you were stuck in management? Like, do you feel like your journey was traditional or no?
I think a lot of it was traditional, but like a lot of people that are creative stay creatives. Like they might be like chief creative officers or executive creative directors. And I had gotten to a point where I had hired an executive creative director and I had hired a head of design, and like, let's let them do their jobs. Right. So here I was now with my two founders, just sort of trying to protect the creative process. And frankly, I remember being a little sad, a little bored, you know, so far away from the thing I love the most. It's like, really, this is what I get after spending 6 days a week caring about the product, the magic part. I had an aha moment. It dawned on me that, wow, every single time my team's working on a courageous idea, they stay later, they're happier. And when our clients buy those ideas, usually the return is through the roof. And every time we sort of surrender to the safe idea, my team's miserable, I got a closed door meeting with somebody, and you know, the return's meager at best. And so I remember going to my partners and saying, I think this is our positioning. Courageous ideas are the only ones that matter. I want to go write a book about this. Let me go interview all these courageous leaders and all these companies we want to work with anyway, build these relationships, devious attempt to like position us. And they're like, we love that, go. And so I start my little sojourn. And as I start meeting with some pretty amazing people, you know, there's this famous line like about every movie ever told, that the hero thinks the treasure is one thing and it turns out to be something entirely different. Joseph Campbell, 101. And this is like exactly what started happening to me. Like, yeah, I thought I wrote the book to position my company, and realized I wrote the book first because I needed the book.
You were kind of helping yourself out, kind of making yourself like, is this, do you think that the book was kind of validation for you, for what you were feeling? Is that kind of what you think you wrote it for, to like make you feel like, yes, this is what we should be doing, or I should be doing, or this is the space I should be in?
You know what? I always said the book was like a documentary, which meant it wasn't like, I'm so smart, here are all my soapbox ideas. It was more like, I'm going to stay in the role of observationalist. And as I met with certain people, certain truths became clear that were needed to bubble to the surface. I'll give you, and by the way, this is not about the business. This is like even like me, the human. One of the stories that comes to mind was an in-person interview with a founding astronaut at Virgin Galactic. Her name is Loretta Hidalgo. And I remember meeting her and she's like, yeah, come up the street and have lunch with me. She was in Orange County. And it's very early in the process. And at this point, I have my own fears, right? Like, one, I'm not qualified to write a book. How do you do that? Another was...
I wouldn't know what you're talking about here.
Another biggie was, don't ask the astronaut a stupid question, right? And, you know, I drive up there, and before our trays even hit the table, she says to me, so... what makes you qualified to write a book about courage? Touche astronaut. You know, it's like, well, I've been writing pithy one-liners on Twitter for a living. That's pretty courageous. And she's like, no, 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 no. She's like, your brain is putting the emphasis where I'm not. I didn't tell you to write this book. Part of your journey is to figure out why you're really writing this book. And as the conversation continued, she said her definition of success is when there's no daylight between the personal you and the professional you. And that was the one, you know, as a guy that had been in the service business for 20 some years, tap dancing, metaphorically speaking, of course, on a unicycle, juggling fire, trying to present subjective ideas to clients, taking a call I probably shouldn't take at 11 p.m. at night, folding like a lawn chair. I remember one time, gosh, with the CEO, where we presented an idea because we thought we had to. We should never have presented the idea. And the client bought that idea. So I just, like, all those little moments, like, flash before my mind as I'm driving back in silence, thinking of, okay, this book is about to take an entirely different twist than what I thought. Now, along that journey, I learned that we do want to be, a lot of us at least, want to be courageous. We just don't know how to do it. And so we confuse it with an impulsive move, a careless move, or I'd say even now, a resilient move. And I don't, none of those are acts of courage. They're all different things. And so as I kept going down the rabbit hole, it became clear that this was bigger than courageous ideas. This was like every company was had some sort of, not every company, but most companies had a deficiency of courage that was holding them back, which meant the leaders, for some reason, felt stuck or scared. The work wasn't what it could be. There's just fear. There's just fear in the organization. Like I said, I realized that this was a lot bigger than just ideas. It was about courageous leadership, courageous ideas, and courageous reinvention. And so when I finished the journey, I remember going to my partners and saying, you know, good news is the book is done, and bad news is I'm firing myself. And that was near the end of 17. Had a 2-year non-compete, held up the book, and then 2019 launched Courageous, launched the book, Return on Courage. It has been a wild 4 or 5 years now going around the country, sharing what I learned. Been very fortunate to, you know, share at Kellogg's and Kraft Heinz and Google and Snapchat. And
changing lives.
Well, it changed my life first, you know, and I had to address that I was like, okay. Like, imagine, like, this thing that you've done your whole career, right? Waking up and going, I am less passionate about this part. I still love ideas, but, like, if the idea isn't authentic to the culture on the inside, you're kind of just lying to the general public, right? And so I didn't want to do that anymore. It's been a fun ride. You know, I went from service me to now telling the truth me in everything that I do, which is awesome.
Yeah, I'm interested because, you know, in just that explanation, it's almost like you had a couple like quick turns. Like, there was this aha moment when you're sitting in your office just being a strategic manager of some sort, not getting to do the fun things that you kind of missed. And then your decision to write the book and kind of go on that journey and talk to these people. But then that one statement, and maybe there were more, but that one statement from the astronaut that you were speaking with, which one do you feel like was the most impactful that kind of shifted your life? Because the way you tell it, you know, from the outside, it feels like that one sentence that she said to you was kind of like the biggest shift of the direction you were going to go. Am I reading that right? Or was there one more impactful than the other?
I mean, that's up there.
Yeah, because the way you were telling it was like everything changed in the way you were telling your story too.
I think every step towards tomorrow, right, as long as you're taking the steps, is the reality, right? So I have to muster up the courage to write the book. Therefore, once we declare that we're doing it, who am I interviewing? And who am I interviewing? Then we have to interview them. I might ask a stupid question, right? Like, every step was a step towards the next big insight.
But do you think if one of them didn't happen, you would be in the same space? Like, do you think if you weren't able to meet up with her on that day and those words were not said, do you think that it would have triggered you in a way? Or maybe you would have met the next person and they said something.
I mean, I met some pretty amazing people along the way. You know, Tony Hsieh, rest in peace, who ran Zappos. I remember interviewing him. This was after the book, but he was like, are you sure it's not Return on Curiosity? So I had multiple people bring up the, is it courage or curiosity? You know, and, you know, all I really wanted to do was put something out into the universe that was going to be useful. You know, I wasn't looking to puff my chest out and be like, oh, look how smart I am. Right. So like there were lots of little stories along the way. And to be honest, even like sitting with the Eric Ryan, who was like a serial entrepreneur, founder of Method Soap, founder of Ollie, founder of Welly. He's an awesome dude first. Like he's just a cool guy. But like when you first tiptoe into that world, you have your own idea of what like all powerful entrepreneur is going to be like until, you know, something about the word courage resonates with them and he's come up and have lunch with me. And so like you realize that you're not that different. And I think that was a big, you know, in my own mind, I was putting space between who I was in this pedestal of who other people are. And then when you actually peel back the onion, the only difference is that they've done it the level that you kind of want to do it at. And you hadn't, or I hadn't.
Yeah, well, I hadn't either. I asked that because I've talked to other people about how a sentence in a book, a sentence that someone has said to you, not you in particular, but someone that has said to someone, how it can change it if it hits at the right moment. You know, like for me, it took me a long time to get to the right therapist and whatnot to find my way out of grieving my mother. And it was just so weird that it was like literally a sentence that my therapist said to me where everything like, it was like in The Wizard of Oz when Dorothy walks out of her house into Oz and it's like sepia tones to color. That was kind of like what it was. It was like one sentence that anyone else could have said to me, but because she said it at that moment in time. And so I think that's why I kind of trigger on that one thing that she said.
Definition of success. Yeah. Her definition of success is when there's no daylight between the personal you and the professional you.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like, I don't know, maybe that's why I stuck to that because it's like, so you remember it. You remember exactly. It was years ago and the impact on that. And so that's why I was curious of how that one maybe opened your eyes more. But it sounds like you've been on this journey with all these other people that continually feed into this service mentality that you have in, and maybe I'm reading this wrong, but it feels like you do things more to help others and more to further a cause than maybe a traditional role of someone just trying to be more successful, quote unquote,
with no doubt
money and prestige and those kind of things. It seems like you lead with value or how you can add value to whatever situation you're in.
I sure hope that. I mean, I'm trying. I'm hoping that's coming off. But like, you know, first of all, I'm not sure if I was always that way. I will tell you that. Like I really felt I was, I mean, I am a fiercely competitive person. I like a good challenge. By the way, one of my other life shifts is I just never thought I was that smart. My brother was always sort of branded as the smart one in our family, my older brother. And I was branded as the good with people son, you know? So it's like, oh, Ryan's so good with people. So like, as a kid, I'm like, oh, he's the smart one. I'm the stupid one. All right, I guess I'm going to have to outwork you. And as a competitor, so like this was another fundamental truth that I believed is like, all right, I'm just going to have to outwork people. So however long that takes, I am willing to commit myself to get where I want to go. And I had seen success at a young age, you know, grew up in a 3-car garage house family, saw the value of hard work, saw what it could bring you. And I think, you know, see it, be it is real. Like if you've seen a ceiling broken and you live in that, I mean, there's other issues that come with that because you're like, well, wait a minute, how am I supposed to get here if I'm the dumb one? Right. So my first life shift, I kind of feel like still happened in the book writing process where like whatever I had buried, I allowed to come to the surface. I'm like, oh shit, this is a story. I'm telling myself that I'm not that smart.
Do you remember what maybe triggered that?
I think it was an amalgamation of all, of the journey. It wasn't, it didn't matter, by the way, that I had survived New York City for a decade. It didn't matter that I had founded my own company at 29. It didn't matter that, you know, I found a way to buy out a partner. It didn't matter that I found a way to merge my company with another. Like, all these things in my mind didn't matter. It was like, until I got to this moment, this pause, which is what the book was, and really did the work. Now it's like there's two stories being told at the same time. You're writing the story of the book, but you're looking at your own story. And that was sort of like, wow, oh my goodness. One, I have been making courageous choices, whether I realize it or not, since the age of 8. Two, this is a story I'm telling myself that I'm not smart, but if I'm not smart, how did I survive all these accomplishments or build up all these businesses? And so it was, to me, that's what I'm saying, it isn't just that one line. The therapy came in, another one that I love. I don't even remember who said it, which is sort of a travesty. It's like someone said to me, it takes you 40 years to figure out who you are and the next 40 to be that person. I mean, I'm writing the book at 39, you know, like looking at my 40th birthday and going, that completely resonates with me, for me.
It almost sounds like writing that book was like a journaling activity in like this dual layer thing. Like you're creating something of value for other people, but it allowed you to uncover a whole bunch of things that you just mentioned, you know, as far as not realizing you were doing amazing things that anyone else from the outside probably saw as amazing, but you maybe saw as just like a checklist to get to the next thing.
All of my little, if there was like, we'll call them confidence metrics. I'm making this up as we go along. My confidence metrics, my checklist of moments of confidence, of being a good strategic thinker, almost never came from something I did for directly for a client. It was like, it was much harsher stuff that happened and like buying out a partner who, you know, wasn't exactly being as ethical, in my opinion, as she should have been. And me stumbling into that and finding a way to keep the company and get rid of a partner. Like almost every step of the way, my confidence, writing a book, you know, like my confidence came from overcoming some massive strategic challenge that I never thought I could do. It was almost like the, oh yeah, I can cut, like you need help figuring out your pithy little storyline for your business. You're over here. We need to move you over here. That to me is the easy stuff. It was all the other stuff along the way. You know, it reminds me of Malcolm Gladwell. I think he wrote in the book Tipping Point, or maybe I think it was Tipping Point. He talks about the Beatles getting their 10,000 hours in Germany. So they played so much more than everybody else. By the time they became the Beatles, it was like, you know, of course, do you know how much we practiced over here before? So I felt like, oh my gosh, when I really step back, I call it body jumping. I jump out of my body, I look at myself and look at all those little moments. I was like, wow, I'm really proud of myself. Like, it's pretty cool. Like, just a kid from Maryland who went on the adventure, and now I get to share these stories with others in hopes of unlocking them. Yeah, I'm in.
I mean, it sounds so interesting because when you made up your term of confidence metrics, the little areas that you were describing were all the areas in which you were doing a service of some kind of value for other people. And like you said, it wasn't the actual job you were hired to do over here by this, you know, brand, but rather saving the company from something that was unethical, you know, and doing that so that other people, because you were probably doing that not necessarily self-serving, but there are other people that work in this company, I'm guessing, and you were trying to keep the value there and the feeling and all the things that matter, if we want to call it that.
No doubt. And even on my merge, it was, I always felt like my people were, it was a family. So like making sure that my family had a place to work was more important than, you know, what does that mean for me? I really believe that.
Well, and it seems to align with when you talked about having that aha moment and realizing that people's happiness and people's attachment to what they were doing and feeling good about it happened in these courageous moments. And you didn't want to necessarily continue on with what that company was doing, because I'm guessing a lot of the projects were very standard, safe, if you will, things that you didn't want to do anymore. You wanted to do the things that lit people up, that were bringing the joy to the people around you. And so that one kind of feels like you made that decision, you know, maybe it helped you personally grow in the long run, but also you kind of made that for others in a sense.
I think at the end of my last business, first of all, I will be the first to acknowledge that there were days that I was a shitty partner to my partners. I had two partners. They were a little bit older. It was a merge. So my folks came in. They had their culture. We had our culture. And it was never a perfect match. And I should have done more homework. And they should have done more homework on us. We still did some amazing things in 5 years together. That's how long we were together. But like in my heart, like once I realized that the way we went about making decisions were not aligned, there was Maslow. This is before the book. Like I would have secret meetings with certain people on the leadership team to try to figure out like, how do we convince my partners that we can't go in this direction. We need to go in that direction.
It was like an internal ad campaign.
It was clearly a lesson in what not to do. So if I'm my partners, you know, from a trust standpoint, I wouldn't trust my behavior. Now on the flip, I didn't trust their behavior. And so we had this breach of trust and we had a culture that mirrored both sides. So I think if I'm really, really honest, as I went on the book writing journey, and I'm an observationalist before anything, as I'm learning how Apple's becoming Apple or Google's becoming Google or Logitech's becoming Logitech or whatever brand we're studying, when I looked at the way they were going about staying agile, staying clear, staying aligned, staying united, and then I put my own experience through that, I just stopped lying to myself and realized like, oh, okay, the problem is as much me and my lack of alignment with my partners, and we don't trust each other. Does that make them bad people? Does that make me a bad person? I don't think so. It just means that we're probably not a good pairing as partners. And so it made it easy for me to go, how can I write a book about courage and stay? You know, like, right. And so that was easy. It was sort of that moment where it's like everything I've learned, I cannot do here the way I'd want to do it. It would just be a constant fight. So back into the darkness we go, right? And what I left with really was with a framework to teaching leaders how to be courageous and the belief that there was a need for it. And like I said, I'm 5 years in on it. Certainly don't have it all figured out, but am madly passionate that I get to do this every day. And yeah, again, this is a branding 101 thing, but like when your company is called Courageous, you're making it very clear who you're not for as much as who you are for. And that was sort of like, oh, one thing I wanted to get right. It was like, our phone is not ringing for someone looking for same old everyday status quo. Our phone rings when somebody is stuck, when somebody is scared, when someone is stale, when someone is spinning, and they can get their ego out of the way and know like, hey, we probably need some outside help. Let's give these guys a call and see where it takes us.
Would you see that? Do you think that book journey was like a quote unquote awakening kind of period for you in which you kind of more leaned into like your heart-centered things? I know you probably did that in some of your projects and whatnot. I just see it as like, I talk to other people about this kind of checklist life. Like we all kind of just kind of like the next thing and then you do the next thing and you just kind of get in that routine. And then like you said, it was like kind of like a pause. And that book period, how long was that period, by the way?
I'd say it was start to finish, 3 years.
So you had a long period of kind of finding yourself or like, I guess, unpacking what you really want to do to that quote of like takes 40 years to figure out who you are, right?
A lot of unwinding. But yeah, you know, I would say it was like a year of research, a year of writing, and then a year to figure out the publishing business because I didn't know that space.
Was there something about that period? Was there anything, and I'm thinking maybe selfishly here from my own experiences, was there anything about you that you knew that you wanted to get rid of, but had a hard time letting go of?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it sounds silly, but like, all right, I'll do this in a very me way. Okay.
You're going to ask me a question?
No, I'll do a story. I'll go storytelling. Okay. So I have this keynote bit. The point of the bit is that we all don't know ourselves as well as we think we know ourselves. So like, oh, I know who I am. I sort of know who I am. Like, okay, really? Can you rattle off your values? Do you actually have personal core values? Are they personalized? Are they prioritized? And generally what I've learned is like less than 1% of the population can rattle off their values and have clarity of those values. And before the book writing journey, I didn't have my own values on lockdown either. I think I know who I am. So the bit is, I share Jerry Maguire. I share like an image from Jerry Maguire. And I'm like, who's seen this movie? And usually 95% of the audience has seen it. Maybe a few of the 22, 23-year-olds have not seen it yet. No comment. All good. See it. It's a great movie. And then I'll say there's three great movie lines that come from Jerry Maguire. Have you seen this movie?
I have.
Okay, do you know?
I can only think of two.
Give me the two.
I can think of Show Me the Money and
Show Me the Money. Okay,
You Complete Me.
Okay, so Show Me the Money. Great line. Anyone have an issue with Show Me the Money? No, who doesn't want to make more money? Great, I get it. The second one was, you had me at hello. That's a sweet one, right? Good old tearjerker. And then the third one is, You Complete Me. And I believe You Complete Me completely messed up my generation. You know, so I don't believe in You Complete Me. I believe in Me Complete Me. And now look, I'm married, happily married. I got married late, had a whole New York City life. I was very lucky, in my opinion, that my wife sort of, she had her own shit that she was dealing with. But when we met, we complement each other. It's you compliment me, not you complete me. Now, my sense is when you compromise, the more you compromise, the more compromised you are. And what I realized when I looked at my own situation with my partners, I felt really compromised. My values were compromised. I couldn't lead the way I wanted to lead. We were just disagreeing on everything. And there was a lot of fear in the building. And in my heart, I'm like, if I'm ever going to fully be myself, I can't be me in this environment. And by the way, they probably couldn't be them with me critiquing or questioning their point of view on certain things either. So you know, what I shed was a false version of myself. What I got rid of was someone that was not totally me. It was a compromised version of myself. And again, they didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. It just was the reality of the situation. And even the way I led other people, I had to bite my lip in certain scenarios. I couldn't be me because I had to toe the company line when I wanted to take a more courageous stance. So now what's nice is I've rid myself of that. The people that I'm aligned with are fully 2 feet in on the values of courageous. They are sacrifices, number one. Magic is number two. Clarity is number three. Change is number four. Every decision we make as a company, are we helping our clients sacrifice and make hard choices? Where's the magic in the business? Right? Do you feel it? How clear are we? Are we helping them get clear? Ultimately, it's all for naught if we're not shifting, if there's no change. And so what's great is by getting myself out of that last life, taking all the learnings from it, I can now fully be myself. And like, this is me on Sunday, on Tuesday, on Thursday, on Saturday. Like, this is me. It's just good news or bad news. Like, this is me every day of the week. And I love that. And I think that's the point. I think that's what Loretta meant by there's no daylight between the professional you and the personal you. Well, in that last life, I had to bite my lip professionally. I couldn't fully be myself. I couldn't give tough love, by the way. Like, I think tough love is still love, right? It's like, well, our podcast was a perfect example of tough love, right? Was it not?
Yeah. No, I think it just shows that you care, right? You're not sugarcoating things. You're like, look, let's get to the root of this and let's figure this out because I want to see it. I want to see it.
Let's get back to the shutting down the computer now.
Oh, God. Well, I didn't actually turn it off. But hold on. Before we get there, I asked that question about, was there like a part that you were resisting shedding or, you know, kind of where you went with that story. Were you aware, like in the moment when you were kind of like working as a partner in there, were you aware that you were a compromised version of yourself? Or was this like through your book writing journey and the research and like looking down, was that when you kind of realized like, oh crap. Like I didn't realize I was letting it get to this point.
I would say I knew within the first year that I had made an error, but I was like, just bury it, just suppress it. Go back to what you always do, which is just outwork everybody. Right. And by the way, even that mentality probably turned other people off at that company. Cause I'm like, no, we're going to be here on Saturday. You know, it's like, so, and it wasn't until the book writing journey that I was like, okay, all right, let's do I like me? Do I like, what is this really about? Oh, this is about identity. Okay, that's what this is about. This is about identity, right? And I've like creative identity. And what happens if I shed myself of this brand? Like, aren't I supposed to be Mr. IDEA? Idea, that was our company. And I'm going to eject myself out of that. And I'm just naked. And like 2 years of who am I without that? Oh, this is identity. And so I think once I had that realization, it was like, all right, well, you know, the spirit of the life shift. Like I can design the life I want to live. I truly believe in this. So if I have to go backwards to go forwards, that's way better than sitting in this purgatory sort of moment that maybe on the outside, it's like, well, identity-wise, in my heart, I knew it wasn't serving me anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like building the life that you want to live is something like feels like an ideal that a lot of people probably have. And it's like, I wish I could do this and I wish I could do that, but you did it. You like were, I mean, we're going to use the word courageous here. I think it's courageous to a lot of people because I think there's just a lot of people that are like, they're not living the life that they want to live because of fear, because they're afraid of the unknown. They're afraid of not having or having opinions of other people that for some reason matter to them. And so I think just by you doing that and leaning into that, probably why you're so successful with what you're doing now is because it's all authentic. You're not faking things. You're not, and I think a lot of people fake things in the quote unquote real corporate world. You do the things you don't want to do. You pretend you like doing it because that's your job.
I really believe this. Like there's no part of me that's like, I am so successful. Like I'm just in it. And I do think it's that you're right, that it's, you know, it's funny. I have a shirt that I wear. It's like, I despise fake it till you make it. I am a fan of mistake it till you make it. It's all about mistake until you make it. And so give yourself permission to say, this is messy, but it's going to get me closer to what I think I love to do the most. And if you could get paid to do the thing you love the most, even if you had to take a few steps back, like a catapult, and then almost like a slingshot, right? So you got to go down and then bam, up you go. Why wouldn't you do that? And I mean, you've touched on this theme a few times already, but I truly care and now truly don't care all at the same time. And what I mean by that, I genuinely care about helping. I genuinely care about being an ally. And I surrender the part where it's like, well, in some ways I don't care, because like, I don't care that this may ruffle feathers a little bit, but you need to hear it if it's going to be for the greater good of you. Now, you can have tact and grace. You don't have to be a jerk about it, right? So when I say things like, Matt, you want imposter syndrome. The minute you lose it, you are landing in the land of comfort and you're not growing. You want messy. So I care and I don't care. I care deeply for the right thing if it's going to help unlock you or free you or liberate you. And then I don't care that it might not be the popular choice, because people don't like conflict, to kind of say what needs to be said. Let's just discuss it. Now, again, I do think, you know, I try to have tact. I really do. But like, sometimes it's like this, okay, I'll say things like, unpopular moment alert, right? Like, hey, really, why do you feel like you're not going for it? Like, what is it? What are you afraid of?
Right. I feel like that I don't care comes from care. Like, it's just like, you know, it's just another version of the way that you care. You don't want to beat around the bush. You just want to be like, let's brass tacks. Let's talk about, you know, what matters, I guess, in a way that we don't need to sugarcoat it or make everyone feel better, or, you know, but you don't care if everyone's like, oh, I can't believe you said that. So in that sense, I get it. Now that makes sense more than like you don't care, because I don't believe that you don't care.
It's more like care is in like a 90 font and don't care is in like a 9 font.
Okay. I thought you were going with 1990s. And then I was like, okay, so it's like neon, or what's happening here? No, I get it though. I think it all just makes sense. I don't know you very well, but I know you from this, our second conversation, and everything that you've said and everything that I've read about you and everything that I've heard on your podcast, it's all care. It's all caring about the good for others. And, you know, you have your sock company that is intending to do good, right? Your podcast, your book is designed to help other people feel value and move forward and help other people feel good. So it feels like your whole thing is just about caring about everyone else. And maybe now this journey has brought you to care about you too and what you want to do and, you know, kind of live that full life of just value. It feels very, very positive and good being on this side and hearing you say all this stuff and do this for other people.
I appreciate that. You know, I'm not good at receiving compliments, but I think there's one in there. So thanks.
I don't care. I don't care if you're not good at that, because I think we can see it. And I think that's probably why you get the clients that you do, why you're able to help them. Why? Because I think someone coming to a company like yours, they're coming probably in fear, right? That they're either stuck or they can't do something, but something about you, something about the values that you instill in your team allows someone to receive what's going to be scary and take action on that. And that says a lot. And it's really cool to kind of see how you took this book writing process and that aha moment, watching people light up and watching people dim when they're doing the things, and you were able to like uncover this version of you that was always there, but like shed the things that that didn't matter to you and to see what you've done with it. I think it's super inspiring, and just thank you for what you're doing in the world. You know, I think it's much needed, because so many people are living what I see as a checklist life, and they just do the next thing that society has told them that they're supposed to do, myself included. Like, I feel like we all get just caught up in this rat race, and you're going against the grain. And I think it's really refreshing.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
No problem. Now tell me, what should I do when I close my computer? No, I'm just kidding. I think it's just a matter of uncovering those moments for me, and you know, fully transparent. I know what I need to do. It's my emotions and my past and all those other pieces of, you know, maybe in the sense of like, you always felt like you had to prove that you were smart, right? Or that you weren't the not smart one. I think it's the same thing. I think when my mom died, I felt like I had to prove to everyone that I was going to be successful, because I felt a natural fear in everyone that I was not going to be, because, oh God, you know, what's going to happen to a kid without a mom? Like, drugs and on the street, you're like, naturally, right? And so I still have that piece of me that if I can't, I do fear the mistake it till you make it, still a little bit.
So my advice that you never asked for, because I care and don't care at the same time. And this is not just for Matt.
Right, this is for everyone.
So with all of my free time that I don't have, if I was going to make a t-shirt, it would say, less think, more do. Get your computer out, less think, more do. Fill it out, go. You need the at-bats. Less think, more do. You could get in there, and the boss could be terrible. Okay, leave. Less think, more do. Don't get caught up in analysis paralysis, right? You just need to like start taking cuts. You know, everybody learns what they want to do from probably feeling like jumping into what they didn't want to do. You know, and the more you do this, the more you realize, usually people remember the best boss they ever had and the worst boss they ever had. That means you have to have a worst boss and a best boss. That's just a rite of passage. I wouldn't allow myself to freeze up so much. I'd just be like, okay, is this going to be the best boss I ever had or the worst boss I ever had? Dun, da, 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 and just get in there and start playing and learning and see where it takes you. Because there might be, imagine if there's just one other person in that organization. They're not even on your team. They're like seven silos away that you saw in the lunchroom when we had offices. And you're like, that person knows what the hell they're doing. I'm going to stay in touch with that person. Year goes by, 2 years go by, 3 years go by. Suddenly out of nowhere, the universe decides to drop some wild, pithy point of view on LinkedIn that person said on your feed. You're like, oh my God, I remember this guy or girl. I love this person. And you reach out. And to me, that's all you're like doing right now is like building Matt's army. Like, who's your people? Who are the people you shouldn't work with? You might find one or two people per every job. But like, the more you do it, the more you're like, wow, that person's talented. I want to work with that person again. Not the boss, not the worst boss, just someone along the way. You need those at-bats.
So less think, more do. I think that's a good piece of advice. I like to kind of wrap up the conversation with a question, and I feel like I know what your answer is going to be, but if you could go back to you getting ready for that merger with those guys, and this version of you could talk to previous version of Ryan, not Brian, because this is totally different people now. If you could go back to that version of you before the merger, would you say anything to him, or are you a believer of things need to happen in the way that they do? Why or why not?
I'm pretty happy with how this has all turned out. So even the oh shit moments.
Just give him a high five.
Yeah, like, good for you for experimenting. I mean, the amount of confidence I took from still building what we built, knowing deep down in my heart that, like, I mean, look, there, I mean, I'm just like going back to it. Like, there were still some very critical benefits that my partners brought. Like, they were adults. I was not an adult. They looked like adults. They, like, our price point went up because I had adults with me. They were 12 to 15 years older than me. That, like, that they're like, I am grateful for that. So to me, it's like, throw yourself in these situations. There's, you're not going to find round peg, round hole. It's never going to be perfect. You just kind of have to, like, make the most of the situation. But, like, you can't do that from the sideline. You got to do it from, like, jumping in the water and seeing where it takes you. And so I would maybe high five myself and say, dude, wow, that was good for you. That was not a perfect dealt hand and whatever is. And, like, you still managed to, like, make some pretty cool things and hire some pretty amazing people and do some pretty cool things from a city known for fish tacos. Way to go.
Maybe you could slip him a note and remind him that he's smart.
Oh, whoa. Don't start to believe that hype. Don't start to believe that hype. Just stay the course, keep chopping wood, see what happens.
I like it. I think you've given inspiration to people that are kind of on the fence about, you know, kind of leaning into what they really want to do or finding a way to live the life that they want to live. And, you know, your circuitous route, if you will, in the way of your pause and kind of what really led you to kind of realize what you want to do, I think is going to serve as inspiration for people listening to this podcast. I often talk to listeners about how, whether or not they identify with these external moments or these internal kind of fire moments that you talked about today. And there are so many that just need this little nudge and this, you know, think less, do more kind of attitude, I think is going to really help these people. So thank you for just taking the time to be a part of the Life Shift podcast. It truly means a lot.
Oh man. Thanks for having me on, Matt. And you know this already, and I won't go too deep on this, but I'm looking forward to seeing your next year, 2 years, 3 years, seeing where your journey takes you.
I appreciate it. This podcasting journey is the most fulfilling thing that I've done, and too bad I found a space that's really hard to make money in, but we're gonna keep working on it. And in the show notes, if people are interested in connecting with you, I'm going to give them your website. I will connect them to your podcast. You can listen to my episode on the Courageous podcast as well. Anything else that you want to tell people to connect with you in any way?
It's a good podcast. Take a listen. Yeah, I'm talking about our conversation. Find me at ryanberman.com. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Even when it's hard, stay courageous.
And definitely check out the Courageous podcast, all the other episodes. You talk to some amazing people that are really leaning into purpose and being courageous in the way that they do it. And so I definitely recommend that. Maybe I'll share a couple of my favorite episodes in the show notes as well. If you are listening to the Life Shift podcast or the Courageous podcast, I highly recommend giving a 5-star review, a nice little write up about how much you enjoy listening to the episode. If it does nothing else, it makes us feel good for a couple moments as we read it. So please take the time to do that. And we will be back next week with a brand new episode. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Matt. Be good, buddy.
For more information, please visit www.thelifeshiftpodcast.com.